It's 8:01, Monday, July the 12th, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. Good morning and welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. This is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. My guest today is Dan Bachman from the Valley of the Daylilies to tell us all about daylilies. Amy Duke is here with me, and I also have my friend, Master Gardener Bibi Terry, to help out in the studio, and she can jump in on the conversation, too. WAIF FM, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It's 8:03, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the Real Stepchild Radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show was Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. And if you have any comments or questions, we invite you to write or call us at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206. If you have any questions for my guests, you can call in during the show. The studio line is 749-1444. Well, good morning, Dan.
Good morning, John, Amy, Bibby. Nice to be here.
Thanks for coming. Good morning, Bibby. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, John.
Okay. I've been looking forward to getting you on this show and talking about daylilies. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started with daylilies, how long you've been into it, what you're doing.
Well, it seems that... a lot of things that happen and change someone's life are always happenstance. 20 years ago, for business reasons, I had to move to a location that was more convenient to get back and forth to work at several times a day. And it was my old neighborhood, and I knew the family that lived there. The father had moved out. The mother was getting old, and the boys that I used to play with had moved along. So we bought the property, and there were some extensive gardens there, but they had been neglected for years. So we were cleaning up and tearing out brambles and honeysuckle and things, and I was mowing, and I was getting ready to mow over this grassy-looking clump. And my friend, Karen Barnes, a great gardening friend of mine, said, well, wait, Dan, don't cut that over. And I said, well, why not? She goes, well, that's a daylily. And I said, well, that's great, but I don't know. I have no idea what that is. So that was 1984. So I didn't mow it over, and the next year it bloomed. It was the old yellow classic daylily Hyperion, and I divided it and put a different place in the yard, and I found out there were other varieties and other colors. There was a red daylily and an orange daylily, and so I started collecting a few daylilies. And then about 3 years later, I saw an ad in the paper for a daylily show put on by the Greater Cincinnati Daylily Hosta Society at Delhi Gardens. And I went, and I was just like a little bass swimming in the pond, and they casted their lure out and hooked me, and that's... It's been either downhill or uphill ever since. I haven't been able to figure out which.
Seems to me like it's been uphill, Dan.
Okay. We had that same Daylily Hosta Society had their daylily show this past Saturday. And I want to congratulate you on winning Best of Show.
Thank you.
It's quite an achievement. They had over 300 entries. I understand, and that's pretty good. What did you win with?
I won with one of my own seedlings that I bred, and it was a purple spider type daylily, which is a narrow petaled, twisty petals on it.
Uh-huh.
It was one we had bred in the garden, and it just happened to be look real good that day.
Have you named it yet?
No, I'm being deluged with suggestions to name it. So it's quite a young seedling, so it'll take a couple of years to sort out.
Yeah. How big is it? How wide?
The petals are about 7.5, or the flower diameter is about 7.5 inches, and
wow.
It's about 36 inches tall, purple.
Yeah. Wow. That's,
we're very happy with it.
Sounds very spectacular. You've been having an open house at your place of business, too. Where
right.
You sell daylilies,
right.
Among other things. Tell us where you're located and how to get there.
Well, it's very easy to get to our nursery. We are at 1850 South State Route 123 in Lebanon, Ohio. We're just 1 mile off of Interstate 71 at exit number 32. And we're it's 1 mile east of the interchange, right on 123.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're coming from Cincinnati, it's really... Once you get on 71, there's no more stops to make. Hard to get lost.
Yeah. Been there many times. Great place.
Thank you.
I just want to comment that I think you're one of the most generous people I know when I've gotten daylilies from you. And you have the club bed out there, which is where they plant the daylilies to let them grow for the plant sale at the flower show. And so you've donated some of your property there for daylilies. And I understand at the show they sold everything.
Right. I understand they sold out the plants that they took there.
So the club bed is currently empty. I guess we're going to have to get some plants
right.
from somewhere to
right. The daily show is a great introduction to people. They go there and they can see all the blooms. And,
yeah.
And sometimes the varieties that are in the show are at the sale, too, and it gets people kind of hooked on them and interested right there.
About how many different cultivars do you have?
I have about 3,250 registered official cultivars.
Different ones?
Different ones. Different
3,200?
Yes.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm. There are about 50,000... in existence.
Well,
50,000 registered, but a lot of those have gone by the
wayside. Some of them are extinct, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I don't know anybody around here who's got that many.
No, we've got one of the larger collections
biggest,
in the Midwest, I
biggest
would say.
Selections, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know some of them are extinct. I know some of the stout metal winters, even a couple of those are really hard to find now.
Right. There'll be a lot of people who breed daylilies for their own enjoyment, and they will register a daylily, and it never leaves their garden. It's just for their own personal thing. So some of them are hard to get. Would be almost
just they just anymore. Want it to have an official name, I guess.
Right. They want to honor Aunt Millie with a daylily. So
well, you know, that's Carlos Linnaeus used to immortalize people by naming species after them.
Right.
It's the same thing, you know, naming a daylily after somebody. So that's good. Of course, they've got all kinds of names.
Well, it's like sometimes it's like going to the racetrack. You'll see a lot of people go bet horses just by the name, whether they can run or not. They have no idea. It's like people do the same thing with Dayla.
Right.
They come into
like
my garden and say, I want to get a daughter, Dayla named her for my daughter, Amy. Well, I've got this Amy, this Amy, this Amy. And that's, some people buy Dayla that way.
Well, you've got a, who was it? The singer, country singer, Memphis.
Would that be Elvis?
Elvis. You've got the Elvis garden.
I've got an Elvis garden. You know, the little concrete Elvis bust you see everywhere.
Right,
well, I've got one of those. and in the little garden and around there, I've got the hosta Elvis lives and a daylily, velvet Elvis and Graceland and blue suede shoes and King Creole and things like that in my little Elvis garden there. So
that's
he keeps watch over him.
Yeah. Well, that's good. All right, I want to ask you a little bit about how you grow your daylilies, because people ask me, and I'm not a real expert. I grow mine, but I don't even fertilize them very much because I don't want the clumps getting too much bigger than they are right now, because then I'll have to divide them, and I don't really have anything to do with them. If I divide them, I guess now I could put them in the club bed.
There you go.
But tell us what some of the main things are about growing daylilies.
Well, I think growing daylilies is probably like growing everything else. The main thing is your soil. Daylilies will grow in basically any kind of soil. In Florida, they flourish in the sandy soils. Up here, they flourish in the heavy clay soils. But they will do, like any plant, they will do better if they have better soil. So when you're planting daylilies or working around daylilies, it's my opinion that you cannot use too much organic material, especially compost, things like that.
Okay. That's about all I do now with fertilizing is I mulch with compost, and the worms work it in.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have some problems, especially with a newly planted daylily. For example, I got the stout metal winter for last year was Primal Scream, and I got it this spring, and it's doing fine, but it's not blooming. Didn't bloom for me at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, daylilies can be temperamental.
Yeah,
like any perennial. There's one of my favorite gardeners in Cincinnati, Charlie Berger, always told me there's a three year thing on perennials. The first year they sleep, the second year they creep, and the third year they leap. And some daylilies will just take off right away, and others have to set in a year and just won't bloom that first year after you pick them up.
Okay. How long have you been out there in Lebanon at that place?
We bought the property. We had 12 acres, and we bought the property in spring of 1997 and began moving our daylilies out there slowly over the next few years, and we finally figured before we're too old and decrepit, we ought to build our house and move out there. So we moved out there in June of 2001.
Okay. Okay.
And that's when I started doing the daylilies full time.
Okay, and I know you prepared the beds out there by trying to kill the weeds and then adding some compost or mulch or something on top. Is that what?
My fear that was my nursery sits on an old alfalfa hay field.
Oh,
Timothy hay and alfalfa, and those are very hard things to get rid of without poisons. And I like to call myself an organic gardener, although I've caved in a little bit with herbicides lately. But I would put black plastic down to smother all that, and then I would till in all my amendments, compost, rotted leaves, manure. And I found when I was doing that, really all I was doing was bringing up all the old weed seeds from the ground.
Right.
So now what I try to do is build up. I'll smother the ground and then just build on top of it and not do any tilling.
That's good.
With manure and compost, rotted leaves, and some peat moss and different products like that.
Well, that's good, because your soil originally wasn't very good out there, as I recall.
Well, the good thing was there's no rocks and no tree roots.
Yeah.
But it was an alfalfa field, so an alfalfa being that legume will help. So the soil was fairly rich, but it wasn't what I wanted.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, that sounds like a good plan that anybody building a bed needs to pay close attention to the soil and get it right.
A lot of people will ask me when they come take a daily home, what should I do? And I say, well, you need to give it a good home, soil, but the most important thing it wants after transplanting is water.
Yeah.
You know, not fertilizer isn't that important at that point. It's just water they need to get those roots filled back up.
Yeah.
I think daylilies are like a camel. They have these large fleshy roots,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to soak that water up and use it. That was necessary.
Daylilies are pretty drought tolerant, though, once they get in and
established. Absolutely.
And they take it pretty good in soggy places, too. I put a daylily, I don't remember which one it was, in my pond last year. And it didn't bloom real well, but it didn't kill it. And it was like underwater all summer.
Yeah, 2 years ago when we had the bad drought, we never had any rain from May till the very beginning of August. And my daylilies did wonderful. The established beds out in the field, I never put one drop of water on them. They just grew and bloomed and did wonderful.
Well, you've got a big place out there, and it's hard to keep it watered.
Right.
Yeah. What other kind of things, plants do you sell? I know you sell some hostas.
Yeah, we sell hostas. We have about 150 different hostas for sale in pots.
Uh-huh.
Most of the daylilies are bare root, but we have the hostas in pots. And we have some different perennials. Mostly the perennials we have are ones that we grow there, and we'll divide up as they get big, and
uh-huh.
we pick a few up here and there. But mostly daylilies and hostas.
Yeah, and you grow a lot vegetables, tomatoes, I know.
Well, I did.
For yourself.
I got to where I was so busy with the daylilies that the tomatoes kind of went off to the sides. But I used to love to grow heirloom tomatoes,
uh-huh.
different varieties, the big delicious ones.
You put me onto that garden peach that is kind of got a fuzzy skin. It's the only tomato I've ever seen that has a fuzzy skin. And you told me that they couldn't sell them at the farmer's market because they were too weird.
Yeah.
But they sure were good.
Sure were good.
I think we're growing some more of those this summer, too.
I hope so, because they were really good. Did you grow a variety that took off selling at the farmer's market because a cooking show had it, featured it?
We were going to the farmer's market and taking some tomatoes, and there was a little variety called Green Zebra, and it was a green and orange marbled tomato, more green than anything. And I'd take some every week and I'd cut them up, put them on a little plot, and people said, oh, those are good, but they never bought any. And 1 week, I said, well, I'm going to take them one more week, and I took a bushel of them, and within the first 20 minutes, they were sold out. And finally, I asked the last woman, what is going on with these tomatoes? I can't get one. And she goes, oh, you don't know? Martha Stewart featured them in a recipe in her show this week. So when Martha speaks, they get out their wallets.
Well, are you growing them this year? Or
no.
Not at all?
No.
We are. We've got some green zebras this year. And I've only got 8 tomato plants that we planted back behind the garage, but mm-hmm. we planted them in compost, and they're just amazing.
Like
yeah, oh yeah. They're overgrown. And we're getting a lot of tomatoes on them, so that's fun. Back to daylilies. One of the questions that sometimes people want to know about after they get their daylilies is how do you take care of them? What are the important things there?
Well, I can do daylilies because they are they can be a maintenance-free item. You know, you can neglect them and not do anything to them, and they'll still perform. You give them a little bit of care, they'll respond great. Give them a good home to live in. You give them a little bit of water. And other than that, that's about it. Now, they'll get some pests. There's a few pests that will bother them.
Okay.
Every once in a while, you'll see a few aphids on them. I haven't seen any in years, but they're just to squirt them off of the water. They don't hurt the plant. There are some spider mites that will get on daylilies. In 20 years of growing daylilies, I had a little case of spider mites 1 year. They don't kill them either. They just make the foliage look a little bad. But I think the biggest pest of daylilies in the insect variety would be thrips.
Yeah.
And thrips
are...
Now,
what does that look like when you have...
Well, it's hard to see. You can't see them. They're too little.
They're tiny. Yeah.
They're tiny little things. I think you can shake them off on a piece of paper and barely see them. But they're little bugs that will crawl inside of an unopened daylily bud and eat on the pigment of the flower and make it all distorted.
Okay.
So,
and
I think you're probably the resident authority on thrips in this area anyway.
Well, we've had them from time to time, mm-hmm. and... they're very easy to take care of with spraying water on them. And I read somewhere that thrips can fly at 0.3 miles per hour, which isn't very fast. No. So basically the wind blows them around like so much dust. Mm-hmm. And I remember our friend Jerry Williams, who had a thrip problem a couple of years ago real bad, and he was using all kinds of poison sprays and stuff on them. Turns out that the home base for the thrips was a big tree next door. And every time he'd spray, he'd kill them. But then the next day they'd blow in on the wind and start all over again.
Yeah. I think you can tell if you have thrips, you will see the daylily buds will have sharp little bumps on them.
Yeah.
And that's the thrip in there. So if you see that, just snap that bud off because it's probably going to be distorted and all the pigment will be all mottled anyway. My three-step program for taking care of thrips is to water overhead because just lay off your soaker hoses for a while because they don't like the wet atmosphere as much, and to deadhead religiously and throw those blooms away.
Yeah.
Now some people say they got a hot compost pile, and you probably do, and you can burn them up. But if you don't, and you're just laying around, they're going to go somewhere else.
Sure.
And I think it's best to deadhead at night. If you have thrips, snap them live blooms on it because they're only going to live on live tissue.
Okay.
So if you wait till the next morning, they've moved on probably. It could be already.
Oh, okay.
And if that's not working, then if you give them just a little bit of insecticidal soap, every 3 days for 2 weeks, you'll control them. Now, they're almost impossible to get rid of, but you control them and the garden looks fine.
Yeah, they're insidious. Nothing's 100%.
Yeah, so it's not. So daylilies are virtually pest-free.
Yeah.
Now, the four-legged pests are a little different.
Like as in deer?
Yes, like the deer. You know, they. That's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a scary thing for daylilies.
Do you have a lot of deer?
There's a lot of deer in our neighborhood, but I have no deer. In 7 years, I've not had any deer damage at all on my hostas or daylilies.
That's great.
And I keep my fingers crossed every day.
Yeah, well, the way your place is laid out and where your plants are, you're pretty far from the edge of the woods. And because you got a lot of acreage there, and deer like to stay close to the edge of the woods.
Yeah.
They'll come out a little bit, and that's why we don't have deer. We don't have any woods anywhere around them. We saw one deer. It was a yearling. This spring, when they have their babies, they kick the youngsters out of the nest, and so the yearlings kind of wander around and get lost, and they don't know where they are. But he didn't stay.
I don't think it hurts that I have a couple hundred acres of alfalfa at a alfalfa farm across the street, which they probably like better, and they're over there gobbling that. So.
I'm sure that's right, yeah. Well, now, Amy deadheads every day, typically, and she'll do it in the morning sometimes and sometimes at night, depending on the schedule or what's happening. But I kind of like it when deadhead at night because all the color's gone from the garden when you go to bed, and then the next day it's all there again. It's kind of neat.
It is nice, and I can't really say that I prefer either way because it has to be done. If I deadhead in the morning, then I am more inclined to see the new blossoms individually up close. But I like the emergence of color from no color, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about foliage. It seems to be a continuing thing. Are there some plants that are more prone to the brown foliage than others?
Without having any scientific study on this, my theory is that the daylilies that have the darker blue-green foliage are more hardy foliage plants and more hardy plants and winter hardy than the ones with the lighter like lime green or chartreuse foliage. And those being the more evergreen foliage, the plants in general are not as hardy, and I think the foliage is a little, I don't want to say weaker, but more susceptible to brown spots, leaf streak,
right,
and things like that.
And some of it is that the more susceptible to the brown is probably thinner.
Yes. Yeah. They're the American Hemmercallis Society, and Hemmercallis being the botanical word for daylilies, is doing some studies on a lot of studies on foliage and giving grants to the universities and that on studying leaf streak. And I think a lot of that though is just that the plant has priorities, and their priority is to bloom so they can make seed and procreate themselves, and the foliage is kind of secondary, so they're neglecting
that this
time of
year. Because the foliage is around for such a long time, and it's beautifully green, and then they start blooming, and it's almost to the end of its life cycle. It's just my theory.
Well,
and so, when you see the blooms, that's what you look at, for the most part, not the foliage. But yeah. The brown can get a bit discouraging.
Bibby, do you grow daylilies?
I do, and I'm fortunate now. I've just gotten some new ones in some just wonderful colors. But, Amy, that was exactly the question I was going to ask Dan, because I have one that was there at our home when we bought it 5 years ago. It has the most wonderful smell. It's a pale peach color. Smells like honeysuckle, but right now it looks awful. It's just been so beautiful. It smells so good, and the foliage is just almost gone.
Has it finished blooming?
Yes.
Do you trim it back?
I do.
And then
I hope
you can
that
pull
Dan
the brown
says that's
out.
The right thing to do.
I think it is. We do, and clean it up, and then it grows out green again before frost.
Yes, and it's been green. It greens very quickly in the spring. It's beautiful.
You
can't wait for the blooms to come. But unfortunately, with the new blooms and the gorgeous scent, you also then very quickly get these dead leaves, the dead
mm-hmm.
foliage. And so even though a few are still blooming, it's just about, as you said, it reaches its prime and it's gone.
Right.
So then I get out and start trimming.
But we really grow them for the blooms.
Yes, and they smell so wonderful.
And that is the priority. So.
Yes. Exactly, but I thought that was a really good point that you made, that Dan did, that they're really putting their effort into something else. They're not worried about
right.
the foliage. But I was lucky with my master gardener friends now. As you know, when you go in someone's garden, you tend to raid, and I have some wonderful new colors.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm finally getting some of the purples in, which I'm excited about, but I'm looking for Dan's spider one. I think that sounds just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Dan specializes in spiders, which brings us to the subject of hybridizing. But before we get into that, it's 28 minutes after 8, and I want to take a little break and do some public service announcements and promotion, if Bibby's going to read those.
That sounds good. We have several this morning, and one, of course, with summer here, everyone should head for the library. We'll give a big plug for reading, not just a master gardener, but a former English teacher, so I want to make sure kids keep reading this summer. The Public Library of Cincinnati in Hamilton County features an expanded list of reading programs for both children and adults. The four main categories of events are book discussion groups, regularly scheduled story times for children, children's special programs, and adult teen special programs. And information, if you're interested in taking your children to the library, or you're just saying, boy, I really need to read some of these terrific new books that are coming out this year, you can find information about events at the main library and the 41 branch libraries in this area. And that information is available on the internet at www.cincinnatilibrary.org. And so please make sure you log on to see what's going on at your local library, or go downtown to the main library, which is so much fun. The next one has to do with people who want to leave that sedentary sitting and reading and enjoying that and going out and getting good and dirty, and that is that all the parks in Cincinnati need volunteers. The Hamilton County Park District's volunteer program began in 1979. Hardworking and dedicated county citizens fulfill many duties and projects each year with the park district, which it would otherwise be unable to accomplish. People interested in volunteering for the Hamilton County Park District may contact 521-7275, extension 245. Again, if you're interested in going out and helping with the parks, which are such an important part of our area, please contact 521-7275, extension 245. And now for our promo, and I always love this one, Cutting the Grass. And this is for someone who obviously you can tell is not from the Cincinnati area. Hear the best in traditional bluegrass every Saturday morning from 8 to 11 a.m. on the Cutting the Grass Show. Amy and I like this one. We're Southerners. Your hosts, Lee Elliott and Moonbeam, will feature the music of Bill Monroe, the Stanley Brothers, Jimmy Martin, the Osborne Brothers, and many others each week. So make sure you tune in to WAIF on Saturday mornings starting at 8 a.m. for the finest mix of bluegrass music. And that's Cutting the Grass.
Thank you, baby.
Thank you,
John. Good job there. I think you could get a job here rewriting some of these promos. I just want to mention a little bit about the weather. It's finally feels like Cincinnati again with this hot and humid stuff. We're a little bit behind in rain, according to the Weather Channel. But our place is further behind than that. How are you doing on rain out there at your place, Dan?
We've been without rain. We had been without rain for about 3 weeks.
Oh,
and
wow.
Things were getting very dry, and then 2 days ago we had a rain for about 45 minutes, a nice, good, soaking rain. And then last night, right about dark, we had rain, and lightning hit the garage.
Oh, wow.
Fried my garage door opener and my alarm system. I can't figure out how to get it working, so.
Oh.
But we had some rain last night, so it's good now. But we're a little bit behind, I think.
Yeah, okay. Daylily blooms are a little past peak.
Yes, we had an early season this year, and I would say the bloom was about a week to 10 days. Would you say early?
Yeah.
So we're
like
we have lots and lots of daylilies blooming, and we have lots of daylilies haven't even started blooming yet. So, but it's I would say a little past peak.
Yeah, yeah.
Traditionally, peak is right about the 4th of July weekend.
Okay, I think Amy deadheads, like I said, every day, and. At peak season, takes about 2 hours to do our garden, and I think we're down to what now?
45 minutes, probably.
Yeah.
But it's counting.
We're well past peak, but we've got some buds left, and you know we'll hang in there till it's gone. One of the things you were talking earlier, Dan, about being maintenance-free, if you want it to be, one of the things... that you need to pay attention to, perhaps, is even if you don't deadhead, and you don't have to, is the seed pod formation, because the bees will come around and pollinate some of those, and you'll get seed pods forming. And if those seeds drop on the ground and germinate, and you will get a new daylily plant that won't look like the one that you've got. And so if you care about that, if you want to keep your cultivars true to name, you need to make sure that you don't drop that seed in the garden. And I've had people come to me and say that, oh, my daylily's reverting. No, you just drop some seed. If you don't want it, pull it out.
I'll give a little plug for John and Amy. There was a wonderful article in the Inquirer about you all, and that was one of the things that I was so interested in, because I tend not to be quite that good, and I walked out in my garden yesterday and realized I've got seed pods, and I better get rid of them. And I hadn't even known that that was something I was supposed to do until I read the article about you all in the Inquirer.
Maybe one of the things that you can do that's fun, if you watch those seed pods, when they get ripe and as soon as they start to open, but before they drop seed, you can harvest that seed and plant those seeds, and you don't know who the parents are, but you'll get a whole bunch of new daylily plants, and some of them will probably be pretty.
Well, that sounds fun. Then I won't just take them off and just throw them away.
Right.
I'll actually try and find a little spot to put those in.
But you do need to let them dry or start to crack before you harvest them.
Okay.
And actually, this year we've had one for the first time that something got away from us, and there is a blossom that is definitely not the cultivar, and that fan is going as soon as it blooms out. We'll dig that fan up, and because it's not the cultivar.
Does it look like anything close by?
A little bit, but it's a pale copy
of a
very vivid bloom.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
One caveat now, Vivi, is that you could get into something that you won't be able to control later.
That's true.
Throwing the seeds, and that can be quite addictive at times.
Yeah, you'll be hybridizing before you know it.
Right.
And then once you start hybridizing, you'll start looking at all these daylilies that you don't have, and you'll want to use their pollen, so you'll start buying more, too.
There you go. Amy said that you'll see the if you would grow some seeds, that you don't know what you're going to get. They could be different, and it's like the a man and wife having children. You'll have six children, and they'll all look similar, yet different. But there might be one in there that looks like the mailman's kid, and it's the same with hybridizing, the way the genes you have. Once, how did that get in there?
But
it's just, you never know what you're going
to
get.
It could be a bee. Beat you to it.
Well, sure.
Hence the mailman.
That's right.
You hybridize, of course. How many seeds do you produce normally?
Well, I'm comfortable with producing about 6,000 seeds a year that I can handle, but I do more at times, and it's a little more than I really have time to take care of. One year I did 17,000. It like to killed me.
Oh,
and
I bet.
Backed
my gosh.
Off from that.
Because you keep track of who the parents are.
Absolutely.
And that's a lot of paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of hands and knees work, too.
You direct sow your seeds in the ground. You don't start them with in pea pots and then transplant.
Right? I put them direct in the ground. I found that I'm not a very good indoor gardener, and they'll come up, and I have problems with damping off and keeping the moisture and the light even. So I plant mine directly in the ground after the first killing frost, and my target date is Thanksgiving. Sometimes if it doesn't get cold, it's a couple weeks after that. Sometimes it's before that, but I just try to get them in at Thanksgiving time for several reasons. And number one is that's when I have time to do it. Number two, some seeds won't come up, but that's fine. I figure they weren't hardy anyway. I'm just looking for very hardy things that will do well in the north. Number three is that they won't get thrown away with the leftover meatloaf. I store them in the refrigerator. You know, I know where they're at. You know, I don't have to worry. Well, what do we do with them now? So, yeah, I direct sow them right in the ground, and they come up when they're ready in April. And,
okay, in April.
They've been hardened off, hopefully.
Yeah, and then what, it takes 2 years normally before you see the bloom?
Right. For me, it takes 2 years. A lot of people use greenhouses and grow them under high-intensity lights and get bloom in a year, but I just soon let nature do it outside and develop the way they're supposed to be. And once you get your first crop blooming, that's the hardest period, waiting for that first crop. After that, you'll have new ones blooming every year, so I don't care if it takes 2 or 3 years. I just have new ones.
Right. And I can't imagine trying to do 6,000 and, you know, planting in the house under lights. That's you have to do it direct in the ground, I think.
We would certainly need a bigger house if you were going to do that.
Right. Or a greenhouse.
Yeah.
Bigger greenhouse.
Bigger greenhouse than our greenhouse, yes. I know this is radio, and it would be easier if we were a television show, but can you explain how you hybridize? First of all, how you decide what to cross?
Well, a lot of it's intuitive. You just kind of have this wild scheme come in your hand, and what I have always tried to do is take the path less traveled, and that's why I got into spider daylilies in the first place, because there was nobody. They were kind of on a down cycle, and everybody was going for the big, fat, round, ruffled things back in the late 80s, and I just kind of took a liking to spiders because no one around here really had any or knew about them. I figured, well, I'll just go in there. And so then I started making crosses with cultivars that nobody else was working. You know, I was kind of keeping my ear to the phone there, seeing what everybody was across the country was using, and I started just trying to use different things and create my own lines that were fairly distinctive. So I just go out there and one of the hard things to learn, even when you're buying daylilies, is to look beyond that pretty face. So many people come in the garden, they'll say, oh, isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
And you need to look at the scape. Is the scape being the stem that the flowers sit on? Is it the proper height in proportion with the foliage? Does it have the branches that come off so the flowers spread out? Are there lots of buds on it? Is the foliage one of those nice ones that'll stay real reasonably green looking, or has it got brown streaks on it? And that's hard to look past that face, but you learn to do that after a few years.
Yeah.
And I concentrate now on finding daylilies that have good branching, lots of buds on them, and then put the pretty face to those.
Yeah. You got to be very selective, I guess, especially if you've got 6,000.
Right, you learn to cull viciously.
Oh yeah.
The first couple of years, you can't throw anything away. Then after that, gone. You compost.
Well, after a few years, you got your own lines going. Then that opens up opportunities too, to hybridize your own.
Yeah, plant. I have every pollination I make, I'm using one of my seedlings or one of my registered cultivars.
Okay.
So I'm putting my genes into everything I do, and I might bring in new breeder plants from other breeders across the country to use, but I'm always using them with my own stock.
I heard you say one time that you don't cross two cultivars from the same breeder or the same line because you'll just probably most likely get a copy of what's already done.
Just extenuating his breeding program, and I'm looking for my breeding program, so I never cross, and there's a few other things I follow, rules I set for myself.
Well, now, physically, mechanically, how do you get the pollen from one plant to the other?
Okay, in the middle of the flower blossom, you have in almost all daylilies, you have six stamens come up, and on the end of each stamen, there's an anther which has the pollen. That's the gold dust that sits on there. So you'll select the two daylilies that you want to pollinate, and one will be the mom, one will be the dad. So you'll take the pollen off the male and take it over to the female. Now, in between all the stamens, there's a longer tube that sticks out with no anther on it. That's the pistil. And you just take the pollen and you'll dab it on the end of the pistil's daylily you want to cross with. And then you do not deadhead that one.
Right.
And you just let that fall off naturally. And if the pollination takes, you'll have a seed pod form there. About 6 weeks, it'll mature, start to crack open, and you harvest the seeds.
Okay. It's easy. It's a lot of fun, too.
And you
tag
absolutely.
That flower with an indication of who the pollen parent is.
I have different colored wires that I use that designate pollen parents.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's easy. The reason so many people, I think, are hybridizing dahlias and there's so many now because it's easy to make babies.
Yeah.
Now, it's very hard to create worthwhile. You know, it's easy to go out for football, but it's hard to win the Heisman Trophy.
Sure.
So, you know, you have to be selective and pick, you know, maybe I'd say one out of every 1,000 seeds I plant is worthy of registering as a daylily.
Wow. Yeah.
If you're picky, I mean.
Sure. Well, you got to be picky.
You have to be picky.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Now, people say that there's no such thing as a blue daylily, and I've read somewhere that that's a genetic thing, that they just don't have the blue genes, and that some people are apparently working on some gene splicing or something to try to make a blue daylily, which I guess if you came up with a blue one, you'd be a wealthy guy.
We're talking patent there.
Yeah. And they also say there's no such thing as a true white. But I've seen some awfully white daylilies, and I don't know why they don't think they're white unless they're looking at that little bit of yellow in the throat, maybe.
I guess if you would take a piece of white paper out there and hold them up, you would see a difference. But there's a lot of dahlias, to me, are white.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, there's some great dahlias
I think
that are white.
They're splitting hairs when they say
that. As far as the blue, I've heard there are some people working on some kind of gene splicing, and they want to come up with a solid blue, what they call a self. A self is a daylily that is all one color.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking for one of those, I think it'll come out of a laboratory
or
maybe way years down the road if they're just using natural hybridizing.
Sure.
Now, there are some daylilies that are getting quite blue in the eye zone.
Yeah.
That the daylily may be a white or a lavender or something like that, and they're getting these eye zones that are around the throat that are getting quite blue.
Yeah, and there are a few hybridizers who, in their catalogs, use a little bit of trick photography or something, too.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. And you know, sometimes you want to see something so bad that you see it that isn't there.
Right.
Blue, and they say, this has got a blue eye. Well, you know, it's not really blue, but it's what we call daylily blue, and it's getting a little bit bluer each year.
That's good. What about tissue culture?
I think tissue culture is probably one of the greatest things that the nursery industry has come with, while at the same time being one of the worst things they've ever done. I think it's a great way to get new plant genera, not just daylilies, out to the regular gardener. That's not a good word, regular gardener. To the home gardener. With at a reasonable price, because the new daylily and a lot of the hosta hybrids come out are over $100, and Mrs. Jones down the street's not going to buy that, but
right.
She might go to the Walmart and pick one up for $5. So I think it's great in that respect. I think it's terrible in the fact that a lot of the speed of these things goes so fast now that I think they're releasing these to the big box stores and big catalog nurseries without properly culling them, because in any tissue culture there's a percent of mutations involved.
Yeah.
And I think these things, the hostas have to be grown up, or dahlias have to be bloomed out, and they have to go cull and pull all the rogues out. And when I don't think that's being done, because you'll go to a big box store and you'll see this daylily, and it's whatever the name of it might be, and there'll be five or six different ones in that line.
And they won't necessarily tell you that it's tissue culture.
No.
Either.
No.
So
some of the good, reputable catalog places might, but in most cases, no. You don't know that.
Yeah, okay. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about was companion plants for daylilies.
Well, you know, companion plants are anything that's not what you specialize in. So if I grow, if I hybridize petunias, everything else is a companion plant. But I think daylilies are great because they can grow in so many soil conditions, so many moisture conditions that about anything can work with them. Now, people always told me you can't grow irises along with daylilies because irises don't like water, but I grow them wonderfully.
I've seen them together in the same bed.
They do
wonderful. It's a good combination.
And yeah. I have got in the last couple of years of finding some prairie plants, some different Native American prairie plants that sometimes they don't want to behave, but I think they're great. And we start out our season with, of course, daffodils and early bulbs, and follow them up with some other like tulips and peonies and irises. And by the time they're done, the daylily show starts.
Yeah.
So we just mix in, and people always come asking me about what do I grow with them, and I'm not a landscape designer. And and I said the good thing about them is if you don't like it, most perennials, move them. So there's all kinds of things that you can work in sun perennials with the daylilies.
Well, your place out there in Lebanon is—you've got your farm where you just have daylilies lined out,
right.
But around your house you've got some beautiful gardens around the house
they're still
you've
a little
done
young
very
yet,
well.
But they're coming
with,
on, and I believe in anchoring any new bed or any new display area I want with some kind of woody plant.
Yeah,
whether
bones.
It be a viburnum or a hydrangea or some of these. Different prairie plants, and I've got a lot of little hollies and things like that. I believe in anchoring every bed with some kind of foundation like that and then plant around.
Good, yeah. That helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And you may remember several years ago you gave us an evening primrose, and we planted, and we've enjoyed it every summer since then.
Right.
And it reseeds prolifically. And so in the spring, if it's coming up where we don't want it, we just pull them up. Sometimes we pot them and give them to people.
Yeah, it's a good sharing plant.
Yeah, it is. Great sharing plant. Mm-hmm. But it's gotten out into some of our daylily beds, and we've left some of them there. And they're blooming now. Of course, they bloom 12 hours off from the daylilies.
Right. It's a great plant to invite people over to watch bloom.
Yeah,
it's like the old nature shows you've seen with the time-lapse photographer. That's actually the way these open. You can just see the plants start to shake, and all of a sudden they're open. It's just amazing.
And it always gets comments, too, in the daily bed when people come through there. What is that?
Come back at 9 o'clock tonight, you'll see.
Well, the blossoms last until about noon before they really are shriveled. And I just deadhead the day before's when I deadhead. But if I could mention a companion plant that I'm real pleased with this year, around the edge, I've used profusion cherry zinnias. And they don't have to be deadheaded to keep blooming. They're a nice little, probably maybe 12-inch high mound, and they're pretty drought tolerant. So with the established daylilies, you really don't have to worry about watering them to keep them going. And I've been probably happier with that than some of the other annuals I put in the edge.
Yeah, my wife Jackie, I haven't mentioned yet, is a big help out there, and she loves to use lots of annuals, mix in where you need them, portulacas and things like that, and ajugas. She's got several different ajugas that
we like ajuga too. It works well to fill in.
There's another good sharing plant.
Yes.
Oh yeah. we've used lamb's ear is another good sharing plant. That's a perennial, but the annual that that Amy uses a lot is the these new sun coleus. They don't sun wilt in the afternoon, and there's just all different color combinations, and they really look good around the edge of a daylily bed too.
There's so many different new varieties of the coleus, and the colors are unbelievable.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I've started, because of what we saw at the zoo last fall with our master gardening class and how many different colors of the coleus there are, and they're so easy to root. I mean, that's just, on my potting bench, I just keep almost a glass of water there that I'm always kind of picking off something from somebody's bed, sticking it in, and within a week I have roots enough to stick them someplace. I have mostly shade gardens, as you know, and so I tend to really like the colors out there, and they are so easy to do that it's just a great plant. And I think, you know, 20 years ago you saw a lot of them, and then they kind of lost out favor. I do notice that some of mine in pots are starting to get the tall, you know, little tiny flowers, the little blooms.
Oh, the blooms.
Yes.
I just cut them.
I do, too.
I mean, way back.
Yes, but they're just a wonderful addition, I think. I've really enjoyed using them this year.
I think, too, the development of the sun tolerant, because they weren't 20 years ago.
Exactly.
But that's helped a lot.
And I found that I have planters on our brick wall in the back overlooking our deck, and I've tried so many different kinds of flowers and it just doesn't work. So I'm going now all just to foliage things, you know, with the Dusty Miller and things that with the dark purple coleus and things that just look good that way, but you don't have to worry about a bloom.
And the foliage is color all the time.
The foliage is color all the time. It's just gorgeous. And with one trailing plant, you know,
right,
it just looks wonderful all the time.
That's great.
Dan, there's an awful lot of daylily catalogs out there, a lot of hybridizers. To my way of thinking, daylily is a good plant that you can buy in a catalog reliably, because you usually get what you think you're going to get. They usually come bare root, and I guess you soak them a little bit like I do before you plant them. But do you have any good, do you have a webpage?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
It is valleyofthedailies.com.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah.
I remember. I knew you when you were lived over in Dillonvale, and your property over there where you were growing daylilies was a valley. And now you've moved out to Lebanon, and you're on top of the hill, but you still call it Valley of
right,
the Daylilies. People might wonder when they go out there. What
yeah,
do you call
my old place was down. All the daylilies were down in a valley, and so we just kept the name.
Yeah, okay. So valleyofthedaylilies.com.
Right. And one thing about catalogs is, and daylilies are a good plant to order through catalogs, because mature plants, you know, because you can cut them back, bare root them, and they can be shipped in a box for several days across the country. And I'm disappointed when I buy a lot of other bare root plants through catalogs, because you just get little tiny liners.
Right.
And then, you know, bulbs are fine, but other plants. But daylilies are a great plant to ship, and there's all kinds of places you can buy them. And I, being a collector, and I'm buying a lot of the newer, more expensive varieties, catalogs is really the only place to find them, different ones.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And most of the catalog people are responsible, and they're going to list proper information
right
on it, bloom season, et cetera.
Right. Okay. We've only got a few more minutes left, and I have a couple of things that I wanted to mention before we leave you today. Some of the upcoming events, the Warren County Fair at the Warren County Fairgrounds is going to be July 19th through the 24th. And to learn all about what they're going to have available, you can call 932-2636. And the Boone County Fair is August 9th. It starts August 9th. I'm not sure when it ends. It's about a week, I guess. And Boone County has an awful lot of free education classes. And you can find out about those at 859-586-6101. And there's an event coming up that some people might be interested in. We have a little really neat place here in Cincinnati. It's Imago. It's a nonprofit ecological organization down in Price Hill. And they're having a fundraiser July 31st from 7 to 11 p.m. They're having a silent auction, games and activities, food, live music. And you can call 921-8455. And I just want to mention another web page. I'm sure yours is good. But this is one that we stumbled across just this week. It's smartgardeningtv.com. And they just have an incredible number of gardening links on that web page. It's primarily a link connection, but they must have hundreds of really interesting gardening links on that web page. And I thought listeners might like to hear that. Next week, my guest on the program will be Twyla Dean from St. Rita's School for the Deaf to talk about garden therapy. So tune in next week and learn about how and why gardens and gardening makes everybody feel better. And did you know that WAIF depends on you, our listeners, for financial support? We're an all-volunteer, nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAIF FM. You can join on the webpage at www.waif883.org. All the programs are supposed to be archived for 96 hours, but the archive isn't working again this week. So we're going to try to fix that pretty soon, I hope. Dan, I want to thank you for coming. Do you have any final thoughts?
I do have final thoughts. And the daylily, I've had so many people coming in the last couple years, and they said they only want reblooming daylilies. And I think this is something that's just been blown so far out of proportion by the big nursery trade that it's not the most important thing. I think a quality daylily is more important than rebloom. And I would get out. I tell everybody to go to Daylily Gardens, whether it be mine or anybody's, John and Amy's, and look at daylilies three times a year. The middle of June, you'll see the earlies. The early part of July, the middle of July, you'll see the mids, and in the end of July, you'll see the lates. And make it like an investment seminar. Don't take your wallet with you or your checkbook. Just go and look, and you'll see these different daylilies that will bloom. Mm-hmm. You can extend your bloom without having to worry yourself sick about whether it's going to rebloom or not. Although that's a good quality for daylilies, rebloom.
Yeah.
But it's not the most important thing.
But, well, Stella Diora started that because they rebloom pretty reliably. But even they take a little rest in between. So.
Right. It's a great daylily story to celebrate.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Bibby, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, John and Amy and Dan. I've learned really so much today. This has been fantastic, and anyone who's interested ought to head out to Lebanon. I think I'm going to. Tom, are you listening? We're going.
Amy, thank you for coming.
Thanks. It was great to be here. I enjoyed being on the show with Dan and Bibby and you. Thank you.
Okay. I guess we'll start our music here and get things going. On the way out, it's 8:57, and this has been the Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF, Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF at 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206. Care of the Master Gardener Hour. I'll be back next Monday with my guest Twyla Dean to talk about garden therapy. That's only 167 hours from now, so make them count. And stay tuned to WAIF for One Voice. Take care of yourself. Your garden needs you, and thank you for listening.